Harihito Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaritamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So page 63, 10 offenses against the holy name. Srila Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, in the Padma Purana it is stated that even a person whose life is completely sinful will be completely protected by the Lord if he simply surrenders unto him. Right? So this process of surrender means whenever it happens. Right? And so that means one can surrender and then surrender further. Does that make sense? So, it means, of course, there's the aspect of, completely sinful and then completely protected. It also has your degree of surrender, right? So, the point is as you surrender, Krishna reciprocates. So, you surrender completely, then he reciprocates completely. So, for Krishna, it's not time-bound. We have to remember, it's our bad dream, not his, right? So he doesn't see illusion. To him, it's just his material energy and the facts of what the material living entity is doing. Because remember, if it's not pure unalloyed devotion, or at least pure devotion, it is sinful. Even if it's, we would consider it in the society as good, nice, it's still, if one is not doing it for Krishna, it is sinful. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. But we will like to categorize sin. Right? So if we go out and if I take it from my neighbor, then it's sinful. But if I go out into the forest and take something, then it's not sinful. Right? But in either case, it's nice. There's that mundane aspect of mundane morality. But the point is that it belongs to God. And it was given to that person as their quota. And you're going out in the forest, it still belongs to God. You know, but now if it's necessary in that, then you can have that as your quota. That doesn't come into the picture. Therefore, it's still sinful. Does that make sense? Because otherwise we try to make this this distinction between before joining and after joining. So if before you join, you could do any nonsense you like, it doesn't matter at all. But after joining, if you do any nonsense, then that can never be forgiven. Right? This means we think the illusion is real. That's all it means. It has nothing to do with reality. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, he reciprocates. Because we have to remember, in our neophyte condition, that surrender is nice. But it's not like the surrender of the Madhyam or the Uttam. You know what I'm saying? Like the kid comes and draws a picture. It's nice. But if you look at all the art museums of the world, there is no kid's little crayon drawing, you know, in the place, right? On refrigerators all over the world, yes. But in the art, no, because it's kid stuff. So remember, the neophyte devotee, that's kid stuff. So if kids do something stupid, no one's going to take it too seriously. And factually, if you really want to get into it, until you come to the platform of Bhava, it's still kid stuff. Right? Just bigger kid, smaller kid. Does this make sense? So the point is we have to take it when it says whose life is completely sinful will be completely protected. These words aren't arbitrarily used. It's not that Prabhupada doesn't know English and all that. In fact, he probably knows it better than us, right? He uses words more exactly than how we know how to use them, right? The colloquial doesn't mean that we know what we're saying. It just means that this is what others say, you know? It is accepted that one who surrenders under the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes free from all sinful reactions. And even when a person becomes an offender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he can still be delivered simply by taking shelter of the holy names of the Lord. He uses this word simply because that's all it takes. It doesn't mean that you think, oh, that's all it takes so I can, like, no, because then that becomes an offense to the name. But one is trying. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In other words, the chanting of Hare Krishna is beneficial for eradicating all sins. But if one becomes an offender of the holy names of the Lord, then he has no chance of being delivered. That's where there's no chance. Not because we have social conditions that we're worried about. Does this make sense? Because the point is on the gross level here, it's being obvious, but on the subtle level also, it's like what in the community is allowed? You know what I'm saying? What do we allow in the community? Because Shastra, you know, clearly gives us statements, but we're very lenient based on what? Our own conditioning. In other words, what was considered all right behavior in our social upbringing, if that goes on in the society of devotees, we don't mind. You know, it happens. It's just life. Right? But that's what we're talking about, is that we're not making a proper distinction in what's morality, what's dharma, and what's Krishna consciousness. The offenses against the chanting of the holy name are as follows. One, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. Two, to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. Sometimes the atheistic class of men take it that any demigod is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. But one who is a devotee knows that no demigod, however great he may be, is independently as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, if someone thinks he can chant Kali Kali or Durga Durga, and it is the same as Hare Krishna, that is the greatest offense. Three, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. So it makes the point, greatest offense, because you're equating, you're not seeing the difference, right? Because they're taking it that the Supreme is Brahman, right? So then the difficulty comes if Supreme is Brahman, then any form that's manifest is illusion anyway. So it doesn't matter what form it is, right? You like Vishnu form, you do that. You like this, you know, it's just like fruit. It's all fruit, but you eat which one you like. Right? So there's these, you know, powerful personalities, so whichever you like, then you worship there, it doesn't matter. It's all the same, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's all the mode of goodness illusion as opposed to, you know, mode of passion or ignorance. So that's not considered nice. But mode of goodness illusion is, that's good. But the actual point is that's the impersonal Brahman. You understand? That's how they come to this point. Right? So it's, yeah. Or people become bewildered and can't tell the difference, you know, like that. They can't tell if, you know, how you say, there's one supreme God or, you know, he looks like a golden calf, right? They can't tell the difference. So then they have problems, right? Does that make sense? To disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Four, to blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. Five, to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. So this includes that the holy name itself in Nama Bas can clear all the sins of the universe. And to say, well, that's an exaggeration. No, only a pure name can do that. That's this offense. You know, a pure name will do even more. We're talking that nama bas, it clears. We're talking here illusion. But because we give so much weight and value, you know, to morality and ethics, justice, that we think that only a pure name can clear all that. You know, a name in nama bas, you know, which is an inferior quality of chanting, that doesn't have the power to overcome illusion. But the point is it's God's name. We're chanting it, maybe not purely, but it's still God's name. Well, no matter of goodness or badness in this world is still illusion. So to not understand that, then we think it's imagination. Oh, it can't be that powerful. You know, but you have a football stadium. If you bring one candle, you can see. Right? That's the point. And that's just a can. So light disperses darkness. So why wouldn't God's name disperse? Where there is Krishna Surya Sama, Maya Hoy Andhakar. Right? Wherever Krishna is, there is no Maya. So the point of Nama Bas is not the quality of the name is any less. The quality of our consciousness is less. Right? It's not the name that's less. So why it won't clear all the sins of the universe? It can clear more sins than you can commit. So this is the point. But because we're so attached to religion and morality that we take them as serious substance, we will argue. We will complain. No, it has to be pure. It's only when they're in good conscience. If they're in bad consciousness, no, then it's... All that's just nonsense. This is the difference between the pure devotees and the conditioned souls. Right? What we were talking about before, where they see Krishna everywhere, they don't have a problem. Right? The person said, but it's an illusion. They're an illusion that they're applying their natural love for Krishna into sin. They're in an illusion. Because it's simply their love for Krishna being misapplied. So they don't have a problem dealing with anybody, no matter who they are. That's why we have stories like Magrari the hunter. Right? He could have been a hunter, right? He goes out, kills the animals, takes them home, or, you know, sells them, does whatever he wants, maintains his family, right? That would be pretty standard, no? Okay? Right. But we have a hunter who sets traps because he knows how to kill an animal. Right? That's what he does for a living. So he knows that if he sets a trap, how much it is that it will catch the animal, it can't get away, but it's not enough to kill them. So now would we consider that more sinful than a regular hunter or not? Yeah, okay. So that's the example. Someone who's an animal killer, but they don't completely kill, they only half kill them so that it's more cruel. And they enjoy that, right? So why is the example given like that? Because if it's a regular hunter, then, you know, we'll take it pretty standard. This is extreme. And he, just by chanting the holy name, becomes perfect. That's the point. So like this, Shastra always pulls these things out of the hat, just so that we don't get too attached to our religiosity and our morality and justice and economics and liberation and sense gratitude. All these nice, nice mundane elements that are still have no comparison to the chanting process. Okay, 6, to give some interpretation on the holy name of the Lord. 7, to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name of the Lord. It should not be taken that because by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be freed from all kinds of sinful reaction, or may continue to act sinfully and after that chant Hare Krishna to neutralize his sins. Such a dangerous mentality is very offensive and should be avoided. Right? So here is that you are comfortable to commit sins because you know that the chanting process will remove it. Right? That's different than one commits sins, but that one's not thinking, I can chant to... That's because the process given in Gita is that by how Maya works is she covers you. So when you're covered, then it's not, you can't, it's not, how you say? Within the devotional process, it's not planning, right? I mean, of course, she can cover you to make you think it's okay, right? So that's what we're talking about here. When one's covered and one doesn't think it's okay, that's different, right? It's still not good, right? It's still not pure chanting, but it's not this offense. This is more clearly when you understand that by chanting I'll be free from sin, so therefore if I continue sin, it's all right because I'm chanting. Right? Rather than I'm trying to chant and I'm trying to deal with, you know, in other words, if you see it as two processes, there's attraction to Krishna and retraction, then that's okay. Well, how well you're doing with either one of them, that's not the point. But if you're thinking that I don't have to bother about retraction because I'm chanting, that then becomes a problem. 8. To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna, one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruit of activities, karmakanda. 9. To instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. Anyone can take part in chanting the holy name of the Lord, but in the beginning one should not be instructed about the transcendental potency of the Lord. Those who are too sinful cannot appreciate the transcendental glories of the Lord, and therefore it is better not to instruct them in this matter. Right? So taking prasad, that's great, but don't tell them too much. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, the question about the seventh offense is that there was one lady who came to the Sunday feast and said that she likes very much coming to the temple, but in the same time she likes drinking wine. So is that considered the seventh offense that she's...
No, because they're two separate things in her mind. She's saying that these are the things you're supposed to do, these are the things you're not supposed to do. So she likes this, but she has a problem with this. It's two different things. We're talking about the seventh offense is... The chanting's so powerful, I can continue doing this and it doesn't matter because the sin of doing that will be cleared by chanting. You know what I'm saying? Here it's just, what we're talking there is weakness of heart. Right? But what we're talking here is this is aparad. So it's a different kind of anartha. You know what I'm saying? They look the same, but it's similar. And you know what I'm saying, but it's different. Does that make sense? You know, it's like fried potatoes is lots of butter and baked potatoes is lots of butter. But are they the same? No. So we have to be able to tell that difference. That's why there's chronological study and analytical study. So between the two, we can start to see the difference. Otherwise, it all just gets put into one package. And it makes it very easy in our own mind because we don't have to consider other people. It's just, you have nice things you can just say like this. Management becomes very easy because you don't have to make considerations, because considerations are always troublesome. You know what I'm saying? But the point is the holy name is, you're dealing with the relationship with God and the living entity. So everybody's an individual, everyone's relationship with the Lord is individual. So it has to be considered. You can't consider it, then understand the weakness is not the person, the weakness is... means that they may have their weakness, but our inability to accommodate and discriminate, that's also our own weakness. Right? Because, does that make sense? Like, because I'm the controller, and then to be the controller, it's so much easier to do it this way rather than all these personal considerations. Or I'm the enjoyer, so why are they enjoying? You know, or I'm not enjoying, so why are they enjoying? You know what I'm saying? Ten, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So it's like you're explaining to somebody, and you take it how far you can, but if you find that they run into a problem, don't push the point. Right? Like I remember one Sunday feast, we were talking to to some, you know, some guests that have come, they're taking prasad, we're talking the philosophy, they think it's all cool, and then we start telling about, yeah, you can, you know, go back to the spiritual world, and I think, okay, cool, you know, because everybody liked the idea of heaven. And he said, you know, and we go there, there's no lust. And they just kind of like stopped eating and looked at it. No lust! No lust! He says, I wouldn't want to go there. You know, so at that point, you just drop that point. Or take it into something else, because that's going to be an obstacle. Right? So then it's just you take another angle. Not that no, it's no less as good. Don't leave it. Because they can't handle more than that. In other words, how much they can accommodate, that's how much you are preaching. Does that make sense? Every devotee who claims to be a Vaishnav must guard against these offenses in order to quickly achieve the desired success.
In the first paragraph, offenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself.
Yes.
It refers to process of archana, those seva aparadhas, or?
Could be, whatever it is, but what he is using the word himself means as opposed to his name. Like that. Okay, so now we're summary of chapters 14 to 13 of Harinam Chintamani by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sri Chaitanya said, O Haridas, now describe in detail the offenses to the holy name. Haridas answered, by your power I will say what you make me say. So he's saying, I'm only an instrument, but he wants him to speak, so he will speak, but he will only be able to speak what the Lord has him say. Offenses to the holy name are analyzed as 10, according to scripture. One should be fearful of committing these offenses. They are as follows. So here he points out that one should be fearful, because by offending the name, then what is your sanctuary? Right? Then there's difficulty. So then, how one will please Krishna? Right? Yes.
Sometimes Prabhupada was saying that it's a problem of the Western devotees, that they are not afraid of Maya. But on some lectures, he was explaining that in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear of Maya. And
because it's an illusion. You know what I'm saying? The Westerners are not afraid of Maya, but they accept it. You know what I'm saying? They accept the illusory dream, you know, as okay. You know, so but the point is they accept the illusion as having substance. That's a problem, right? They're comfortable with it, right? You grow up in a life. It's like what was it? That one experience of one Gaudiya preacher was speaking to, you know, some dignitary, you know, from the British Raj. And he was telling about the four Gaudiya principles. And after telling him, you know, because he was asking, how do you take this up process? And they told him the four Gaudiya principles. And it was kind of like, but that's like the sum and substance of life. You know, because without, you know, illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication, what do they do? I mean, there isn't anything else. Right? You're only getting money and power so you can have those things. So his was kind of like, well, what's left? What do you guys do? You know? Does that make sense? So there's a difference between that and it's not an illusion. You're not afraid of a dream because it's not real. So what's the fear? What's the fear of a dream?
You may get succumbed, start to believe it's true.
But that's the Westerners. They believe it's true, but they don't have any problem with it. But he's saying the devotees understand it's not real, so why you should be afraid of something not real? It's just like when you go to sleep at night, right? Are there monsters under your bed?
I don't know.
Green, cold, slimy monsters just waiting to drag you out of bed and suck all your, you know, blood and life out of you, you know, once you close your eyes, right? But kids think that there's something under the bed. You know, the adults have to come in and tell them there's not, or, you know, they have to get down there and, you know, see that there's none there, or, you know, do something to get rid of them. You know, so the adult is the adult scared of the monsters under the bed? No, but the kid is, right? But what if the kid's not scared of the monsters under the bed? You know, means there are monsters under the bed, and he's fine with that. You understand? What do you call him?
Fearless.
Fearless. But he believes there's monsters under the bed. Are there monsters under the bed? So would we call that fearless?
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. It's like Don Quixote, right? Wasn't it? He was not afraid of the windmills. You know, they were, what were they? Some kind of demon. Wasn't it Don Quixote?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then he goes out, he's fighting with the wind. So what do we call him? Crazy. So why do you think Prabhupada uses that term when he refers to Western culture? Because they firmly believe there's monsters under the bed, but they're not afraid. But he's saying the devotees don't have this problem because they don't believe there's monsters under the bed, so they're not afraid. And that's the difference there. Right? So as long as you think there's monsters, then you should, then the point is it's natural to be afraid. Right? So you take shelter of higher authority. But when you understand there are no monsters, then that's better. Does that work?
Yeah, but still one can be like resent, careful not to start to believe in this.
Start? What do you mean, start?
After one finishes, like...
Yeah, but after one finishes, then why would one start?
No.
You know what I'm saying?
By committing some offense, one can...
That is there, but that's another topic. You know what I'm saying? The point is that the devotee is not afraid of Maya because he knows what is actually Maya. So you're afraid of something you don't know. Like, let's say you have to go take the garbage out, you know, and take it into the alley, but it's dark at night, right? And there's some sound. You're afraid. Why? You don't know what it is, right? But if you know it's just a cat, then there's no problem. Does that make sense? Yes. You know what I'm saying? So the one is you've taken shelter of Krishna, therefore you're fearless. The other is that we're not out of the clutches of Maya, so we're afraid of Maya. But not without, you know, proper reason. We have the knowledge. So we know how to avoid, but we're afraid of committing offenses. Does that make sense? Understand? You know, so you're taking two different perspectives here. Same point, but it's different perspectives, so one has to be able to appreciate that difference. Does that work? Okay. One should be fearful of committing these offenses. They are as follows. One, to blasphemy or criticize the Vaishnavas. Two, to consider the other living entities, such as the demigods, are independent of Krishna. Three, to disobey or disrespect the Guru. Four, to disrespect scriptural authority. Five, to interpret the meaning of the name and to think that the glories of the name are imaginary. Six, to commit sinful activity on the strength of the holy name. Seven, to give the name to the unfaithful who are not ready to accept. Eight, to consider the holy name as karma and pious activities. Nine, to be inattentive while chanting the holy name. Ten, after having taken correct knowledge, being aware of the glories of the holy name, to remain attached to the material world of eye and mind, and ultimately reject the name. These shall be described one after another. So here is that one has attachments, but your remaining attached means you don't see a problem with it, you're committed to it. And so therefore then one gives up the chanting process. This is not talking about you're chanting and but you still have attachments, right? Then you're trying to work on those, like that. One, blasphemy of Vaishnavas. The first offense, known as sadhu ninda, criticism of Vaishnavas is very harmful for those wanting to progress in spiritual life. First, let us define what sadhu or Vaishnava is. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna enumerates to Uddhava the characteristics of sadhu. Dayalu, merciful. Sahishnu, tolerant. Sama, equal. Droha shunya vrata, penance without injury to the body. So it's not that our austerities will be harmful for the body or injury to the body. Satyasar, truthfulness. Vishuddhatma, purified. Parahita rata, engaged in the welfare of mankind. This kame is supposed to be belongs to this next one. Mm-hmm. Kame, akshubhita, buddhi. Okay, intelligence free from lust. Danta, restrained. Akinchana, devoid of concept of ownership. Mridhu, gentle. Suchi, clean. Parimita, bhoji, regulated eating and other habits. Santanam, peaceful. Aniha, apathy to materialism. Driman, patience. So it's apathy to it. Doesn't mean he can't deal with, work with it, but he doesn't have any interest in it. Driman, patience. Stira, steadiness. Apramatta, attentive, alert. Sugambira, very grave. Vijita, sadguna, conquering over the six gunas. Hunger, thirst, lamentation, envy, old age, and death. So if you want something to work on, then these are your six. Right? Amani, not expecting honor from others. Mana Dana, giving respect to others. Daksha, skillful. Avanchaka, non-hypocritical. Jnani, knowledgeable of the scriptures. By these characteristics, one to know who is the sadhu. In the footnote, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in Madhuri Kadambini, the offender may once again try to rationalize his misbehavior by saying, quote, according to the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.29, only those who are compassionate, peaceful, and tolerant are called sadhus or saintly persons. Therefore, the offense of blaspheming a devotee is appropriate only when someone who possesses these characteristics is criticized, but not for one who has not developed these qualities. In reply, the scriptures state that even if reprobates, cheaters, hypocrites, pretenders, outcasts, and worse take up devotional service, needless to say, they are still considered to be sadhus. They must not be criticized for their past, however terrible it may have been, and they cannot be barred from being accepted as Vaishnava devotees, nor can their devotion be deprecated. So in other words, he's taking it that any devotee we don't criticize. So the point is unless you have responsibility and you're dealing with them to try to, awaken them up to the process, you know, then only there might be some critical dealings. But one has to be able to judge whether that's getting result or not, because the responsibility is they get the result. Right? Means one may make critical comments as long as it's getting the results. If it's not getting the results, the critical comments have no value. However, there are two types of characteristics, principal and marginal. The principal characteristic is exclusive surrender to Krishna, while all others are dependent upon it. Right? So as you surrender, then they may manifest or not. So it's not that unless those characteristics are there, that you say will define that they're a sadhu or not. The point is this exclusive surrender to Krishna, that's the central feature. Others may manifest or not according to that. So if someone surrendered to Krishna, that's the central point. That's how you understand they're a sadhu. And then the more these qualities come, naturally the more qualification is developed by that surrender. Does that make sense? But the point is, if surrender to Krishna is present, you know, whatever stage it is, then one avoids criticism. By some good fortune, one may get the association of Vaishnavas and then attain a taste for the name, chant the name, and take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. This becomes the chief characteristic, and by continuing to chant the name, all the other characteristics make their appearance. Therefore, they are called marginal or accompanying. Though secondary to the principal characteristic, they will certainly appear in the body of a true Vaishnava or sadhu as the effect of proper chanting of the holy name. The principal characteristic is one, namely surrender to Krishna's name, which will prevail in all sadhus, no matter what varna or ashram, grihastha or sannyasi. However, according to ashram or varna, the second characteristic will differ to some degree. And even if there appears some bad element or fault in a person, if he has the chief characteristic, surrender to Krishna, he must be considered a sadhu and be respected and served by all. This is Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita. Right? Because the point is one's purifying. Because our tendency is to say, no, but unless they're pure, why I should respect? Right? But the point is what's the problem? Right? If we're talking about amanina manadena, right? We're willing to offer, not expecting honor from others, manada, giving respect to others, what's the problem? Because we consider ourselves special, so why would we respect someone who we feel doesn't have the qualifications that we would respect? Right? In other words, the marginal qualities to us is actually the more important. And the primary quality, that's not actually the important quality. So is that a proper understanding? No. So how can we take that stance so strongly? Right? So it's for our own consideration. Because we actually think that all these bad qualities have some validity. They're real. So it's devotional service is real, and these qualities are real. No, these qualities aren't, bad qualities aren't real. They're an illusion. Right? So if one's cultivating the proper, then when the qualities manifest that are good, those are real. Right? So it's just a matter of purification. Right? You know what I'm saying? The guy is all muddy, right? He goes into the shower and he starts washing his head. And then we're complaining that, you know, his back, his feet, they're all dirty. You know, or someone else goes, the guy next to him, and he goes into the shower, and he's all muddy. And so he starts with his feet and all that, but we complain his head and every that is dirty. You understand? The point is the process is going on. There's going to be something. The point is those qualities that we don't consider from our conditioning to be so bad, those ones we'll tolerate. And those ones from our conditioning are bad, we won't tolerate. You know what I'm saying? Someone grows up in, you know, the family's very active, you know, father's, you know, whatever it is, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, the mother's also like that, they're all professionals, his brothers, you know, and engineers, other ones like that, they're all very active. So therefore, someone who's lazy, they can't tolerate. You know what I'm saying? So then when they come to devotional service, someone's not as lazy, then they can't talk, this is so bad. You know, but at the same time is because of this attitude, having a big false ego, wanting to be the controller of everything like that, having something to say about everything, which annoys everybody else in the temple, they consider as normal. Because everybody in their family was like that. Right? But that's also a problem, because he's not respecting others and he's expecting respect. You know what I'm saying? So somebody is lacking the quality of activity, right? And regulation, but he has regulation, but he doesn't have respect for others and not wanting for himself. So you understand what happens? In other words, of the 25 qualities, of the marginal qualities, which ones are opposed to the qualities we may have or value, those are the ones we'll judge people by if they're sadhus or not. But it's making the point is when surrender to Krishna, that's how you judge. Does that make sense? you know, that's also why you associate with like-minded persons, because they have their conditioned qualities are similar. So the qualities that are annoying to you, generally they won't have. And the qualities that you may appreciate, then they might have. Right? Because we're seeing through material vision. Does that make sense? Because the point is to surrender to Krishna. That's what's special. But if one continues like that, then everybody will start to develop all the nice characteristics. Yes.
How would you define surrender?
How would you define? It says here, by some good fortune one may get the association of Vaishnavas and then attain taste for the name, chant the name, and take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So that's basically your... That makes sense. So someone who's moving in that direction, has faith in Krishna, understands the servant of Krishna, is trying to, you know, understands the processes, chanting, develop love of God, so they're trying to cultivate that. So that basically means anybody that you know in or connected to ISKCON. They're going to be serious according to whatever their degree of surrender is. You understand? Yes. Yeah, yeah. But still, there's something there. They're accepting something, rejecting something, you know, having some connection. But also being, feeling meek and humble is one of them. So are we, you know, okay, well, they don't see Krishna as their maintainer, protector, or they're not identifying as a devotee, but are we meek and humble? You know what I'm saying? So we're able to very nicely, you know, accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable, but we're not meek and humble. So those who don't accept and reject, you know, in other words, what we've done, if somebody else is not doing that, that's the problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we don't impose...
Yeah, that, but also it's we don't impose our particular... condition standards on everybody else. That's why they're always giving what's the central point, the spiritual perspective. Because if we use that, then we find that everybody is not a problem. Because the Uttamadhikari goes even beyond this, that they see all living entities as devotees of Krishna. Because that's actually what they are. It's just a matter of how much illusion they're in that they're not understanding this. So if the illusion's too much, they don't understand it at all. And then if that's lessened a little bit, then they're neophyte more than Madhyama, and then, does that make sense? So, but they see all living entities as servant of Krishna, so they deal with everybody and everything very nicely. So here it's at least, if you're somehow or another criticizing a karmi or an animal or, you know, like this, you know, there's reason for comment, but it's not the highest platform. But if you say bad, you know, something like that, negative about a gross materialist, it's not that it's wrong, and there's nothing good to back it up, really. You know what I'm saying? You could look at it from some social point of view or the principle, but you would have to do it because they're not doing it at all. So if you did criticize, that's not so bad. It doesn't please Krishna. You're not going to actually become perfect in your chanting or your deity worship or anything like that. But at least it's not going to be offensive. It's just not a good attitude. You know, it's just like, let us say, you know, you're doing something with others. And, you know, a friend or someone you know or, you know, like that. But they're grumpy. Right? The mood is wrong. You know, so you can't get too involved and too inspired. But you do the work and it's not offensive, right? But, you know, so it will go on. You know, the cooking will happen or, you know, the other activity will happen. But it's not like exciting. Now, if they give up that, then now you can have dynamic interaction. You understand? So if we offend the non-devotees, then the mood's not right. But it's not offensive that you can't function. You know what I'm saying? Because the standard is all living entities, right, are devotees. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you find what it is that can be respected, because what's not respectable, why worry about it anyway? You know what I'm saying? Let's say the wedding is going to happen and all that, and so you know the bride, the bridesmaids are all in the room. They're all getting dressed in that, and they're all in basically different degrees of undressedness, right? And so then you know the 3-4-year-old kid walks in. Are the ladies bothered? No. Why? It doesn't disturb the mood. Why not? What is he seeing? Yeah. So in being innocent, what does he see? He just sees the people he wants to interact with. You know, because for them, because he'll walk around naked, so if they're naked, it doesn't make any difference to him. You know what I'm saying? Naked or not naked has nothing to do with interacting with the person. You know? Like that. So they don't see because they don't have that quality. So if we're seeing bad qualities, what does that mean? We have them, either in an unpurified or a purified state. But it's an area that we deal with, because when we go through the 26 qualities, it's not that each one of them is something that we worry about. You know, there'll be certain ones that we'll take in as noteworthy. You know, like if I say poetic, you know, it's like how many people are worried about that? But I know devotees who would appreciate that very much. Does that make sense? You know, so there's different qualities. Regulated eating and other habits. You know, it's like, whoa, that's a nice thing, but if you don't have it, it's no big deal. You know, like that. You understand? Because they don't, merciful is there, yeah, because of the thing, tolerant, equal, especially equal, right? Penance without injuring the body, you know, but, you know, do we complain about a tattoo? Right? So that's not doing great for the body. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so many things we might do may injure the body. You know, they're not recommended by Shastra, or, you know, or it's too much for us to actually be able to do. You know, truthfulness. But what's truthfulness? Truthful means it's facts, or it's socially acceptable. Like we say, this world, birth, death, old age, and disease. Oh, why you're always so negative? You know, be more positive. No, but it's truthful. You know what I'm saying? So we have these things that purify, right? You know, who even knows what purity is, right? You know, so I mean, like the, how you say, maybe the Roman Vestal Virgins, okay, then you're talking about some purity there. But, you know, other than that, then it's like, you know, what has that got to do with, you know, engaged in the welfare of mankind? Okay, that's a nice one. It goes along with merciful and equal, you know, like that, you know, but it's only because it's popular nowadays. Intelligence free from lust. Now that one doesn't even, you know, what is that? You know, it's like, you know, it sounds great. But the other ones you can kind of relate to, but that one's like, you know. Danta, restrained. You know, only if it's in a formal situation, but you don't like those situations. But, you know, so if it's good for the business or something else, then you'll do it. Devoid of concept of ownership. Hello. You know, it's like that, you know. Midu, gentle. Okay, that's nice, but you shouldn't get stepped all over and everything like that. Suchi, clean. Okay, yeah, you should look clean. But pure, remember, purity, that you don't have to worry. As long as you look clean, it's good. Right? What was it? Regulated eating and other habits. You know, it's kind of like when you feel like it, you eat. You know, so I mean, you know, that's for, you know. You know, your grandmother who lives out in, you know, the countryside in the old house, and, you know, she gets up and she has her coffee and her donut, and she does it every day, and she's been doing that for the last 30 years, you come to visit her, and all that, and, you know, so it's nice, but, you know, it's a little strange, you know. Santaman, peaceful. I mean, that's really good when you want to do your yoga, but the rest of the time, it's like, you know, why be peaceful? Where's the excitement? Where's, you know, life? How would life be if you're peaceful? You do nothing, right? apathy to materialism. Hey, forget that. You know, because it's like, okay, we're not. But the point is our inspiration for dealing with the material energies because we're not apathetic to it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The guy is doing the management because he likes management. When the constant obstacles, people criticizing for what he's doing, nobody likes what he's doing, then he starts to lose that interest. So does he want to do the management? No. So we're talking about here is that there's apathy towards it, but dutifully one does it. That we've never heard of. Right? Patience. You know, what's within limits, right? You know, like that, you know. Okay, you've ordered the meal, you'll wait 20 minutes, but at 25 minutes you start calling the waiter over and want to know what is going on. Like that. Steer a steadiness. Okay, in an occupation, but in anything else, then that's that, you know, like that. Attentive, alert, now that's good if it means now you're getting to ones where you're talking about people who are actually successful, right? So they have these qualities, a regulated, patient, like that, that steadiness, attentive, alert, but no apathy to materialism. Very grave, now that just gets boring, right? You know, like that. Conquering over the six gunas, hunger, thirst, lamentation, envy, old age, and death is like what's left. You know? Like that. You know how many people would go out of business? You know? Not expecting honor, you know, giving respect to others. Skillful, and that's a nice thing. You know? But that doesn't mean having a piece of paper. That means you can actually do it. Right? Non-hypocritical. You know, I mean, that's, you know, how you perceive it. You know, of course, we never see our own faults, so we're never hypocritical. Jnani, knowledgeable of the scriptures, you know, don't be fanatic. You understand? So you take it from the Western culture, very few of these have any advantage. One, if you're a liberal, then you get into merciful, tolerant, equal, truthfulness, welfare to mankind, like that. Does that make sense? Maybe peaceful. You might consider okay. Clean, maybe not, you know, like that. Then the people who are going to be, you know, successful in the world, you know, generally you're more your conservatives and stuff like that. Though you do have people who are mixed. They're going to be the regulation, you know, the gentle, the clean. Oh, the gentle would probably also be appreciated by the liberals. You know, your patience, steadiness, attentive, alertness. Gravity, you know, that you can think about it, get very deep about it. At least being able to present, being respectful to others. Skillful. You understand? But then some of these, just they slip through the cracks. You know, because they're just not part of the culture.
You bring, pointing out apathy to materialism. You also made a comment about the void of concept of ownership. Akinchana and Aniha.
A materialism means you're going to generate things. The sense of ownership means that who it belongs to once you've generated it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say the person goes out and he wants to get things, and he gets things for the family or friends. But once he's given it to them, they're theirs. They can do with it whatever they like. You know, so as long as they're happy doing with it whatever they like, what's the problem? You got it to make them happy, they're happy. You may not have done it like that, but hey, it makes them happy, cool. But if someone else is, they've gotten it, and they've given it, but still they have some opinion or want to maintain control of how you use it. Does that make sense? You know, so I'm saying there's a difference. Means ownership is once you've gotten it, the other one is to get things. You know what I'm saying? One's focused on prayojana and one's focused on avideya. You know, one leads into the other, so they're all connected. All these qualities are all just the manifestation of the love for Krishna applied in the different, in particular areas. Does that make sense? You know, so therefore, for the devotee, it comes out very nice. because it's connected to the Lord. So the quality has some reality. But on the material platform, the quality is not in connection with Krishna. Therefore, it doesn't have any substance. You know, it's still the perversion of the love for Krishna, instead of the natural love for Krishna being applied in this way. Does that make sense? So that's why one, it's good quality, and the other, it's not a good quality. Because ultimately, yeah, oh, but you can say, oh, but he's very merciful to others, and he's always doing engaged in welfare activities for other people. You know, he's very equal how he deals. So he has good qualities. But the point is that's just his love for Krishna applied into the mundane. So how is it actually good? You know what I'm saying? What's good about it is simply that's the process of manifestation of Krishna's qualities. So what you're appreciating is Krishna's qualities, not the person's. Because with time, that love being not applied to Krishna properly, it will get distracted into something else. And the person who's very merciful today, tomorrow won't be. The person who's very gentle today, tomorrow won't be. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, in other words, the person was very, very tolerant and very equal and very kind, you know, when they were loading them into the trains, right? And dropping them off and, you know, when the nice waltz is playing, then escorting them into their different places, you know, where they're going to go. Some will go for work, some will go for a shower, you know, all these different things. But when they came out, they weren't like that. You understand? So that same quality didn't remain because the situation changed. Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
Huh? Very corrupted use of those qualities.
Yes. But the point is that when it's connected to Krishna, then all these qualities are glorious. But the point is that central quality of surrender to Krishna, that's the main thing. These others may be manifested or not. Bhima is not known for being merciful, tolerant, you know, how you say, you know, not expecting, I mean, giving respect to others. Right? He's not known for those. But it's not that he isn't. You know what I'm saying? It's just when he when he's dealing with his brothers, dealing with his mother, then all these qualities are there. But when he's out, you know, but Yudhishthira, you see, these are still there when he's dealing. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So can we say that if you don't surrender to Krishna, we surrender to Maya?
If you don't surrender to Krishna, you surrender to Maya, yeah. So that's what retraction means, drawing back that surrender to Maya, bringing it back out, and then trying to transfer it back into surrender to Krishna. Because that's why it's two things. Surrender to Krishna, that's the devotional. Giving up the surrender to Maya, that's not actually the devotional, because there are people who are giving up surrender to Maya, but are not surrendering to Krishna. Right? You're impersonalists. You know, they're giving up their surrender to Maya, but not surrendering to Krishna. So that's why if it's in connection with Krishna, it becomes valuable. If it's not in connection with Krishna, it's not actually valuable. It may be more, you could say, on the material platform, you know, renunciation is greater than sense gratification. So you could say that they're more respected on the material platform of piety, right? You know, therefore the priest is respected over the lay person because of that renunciation. Does that make sense? Or the person who's, you know, working, you know, so hard in that, you know, in the company he puts in 12 hours a day while everyone else only does their 8, that his renunciation is appreciated. He's greater than the other ones. But it's still material. You know what I'm saying? Yes?
This renunciation of bhakti, you mentioned, would be qualifying as part of bhakti?
It's part of upaya bhakti, but it's not part of phala bhakti.
Yeah,
No. It's useful. But we have to be able to discern. Otherwise, sometimes devotee thinks because he's renounced, he's devotional. He won't eat more, or he won't eat all the nice things. So therefore, he's superior to everybody else taking prasad because he's more advanced. But that's not the point. The point is the attraction to Krishna. He's not attracted to Maya. But if he's not attracted to Krishna, you don't call it devotional. But he's doing it in pursuance of. So he'll get benefit, but he won't get as much benefit as he actually understood if he put his energy into being attracted to Krishna rather than not attracted to Maya. That would be considered the better platform. So we're making the distinction so that we don't mistake the useful, the useful non-devotional qualities. Does that make sense? The guy's an engineer and he's using that for Krishna, but is the engineering what's really useful? No, it's doing it for Krishna that's useful. Does that make sense? Like you're building a building, but unless the building's being built for Krishna, that's what's important. So the occupation is not the primary thing. It's only supportive if it's connected. If it's not connected, it doesn't have any value. That's the point. But surrender to Krishna has value whether it's great or not. Right? You're fully surrendered or you're not fully surrendered, but still, whatever degree of surrender is there, it's valuable. Does that make sense? Okay. It is concluded that one who is solely devoted to Krishna and sings his name is known as a sadhu. Other than the devotees of Krishna, no one else is considered to be a sadhu. One who considers himself a sadhu is filled. One who considers himself a sadhu is filled with material pride. But one who thinks himself to be the lowest rascal humbly takes shelter of Krishna and sings Krishna's name is the real sadhu. Right? So that means one is a devotee, but he's filled with material pride. It doesn't say he's not a devotee. But it's not the standard. So what we're saying is between being a non-sadhu to being, you know, what he used before, a real sadhu, there's in between, where there's partial real sadhu and partial, you know, not so real, you know, non-sadhu. So that the point being is that those qualities shouldn't be focused on and criticized. Right? It doesn't mean if one's not in some position that it's necessary that one doesn't try to deal so that others will not become disturbed by the particular individual's conditioning. Does that make sense? But we have to distinguish that in dealing with it, one has to deal properly because they are sadhus. Right? You can't just deal any way you like because that's the way, you know, you read about it in the news. You know, or you read that editorial and that was their opinion. Or you talk with your friends and you all have your opinion. That doesn't matter. Right? That's our conditioning. Does that make sense? Right. It's just like, let's say we're very merciful and tolerant and truthful and doing welfare for to others and like that. But then we have a person who's very, you know, aggressive and, you know, he has this steadiness and he's very, very much, you know, expert and skilled in his areas, but he's just getting his work done and doesn't care about others, right? Right? So he's not dealing nicely. Okay? So us as the merciful, tolerant, equal, you know, liberals, how are we going to deal with this person to correct them? In reality. Huh? Roughly. So what's the difference? They're rough, and to get your work done, you're rough. So what is actually the difference? No, it's only if I have this particular situation where everything's very nice. You know, the butterflies are out, the rainbows are rainbowing, the sun is shining. You know, and you know the smoke is coming out of the smokestack of the house that's 45 degrees on the hill. You know, the birds are flying. You know, it's all perfect. Then I can manifest all those qualities. But if anything changes, then I'm just as nasty as anybody else. All it is I'm focused on the niceness in that experience, just by, changing one's viewpoint. And the other one is out there to get something done. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So all it is different approaches to how to be happy on the material platform. That's all. And if it becomes disturbed, either one will deal roughly. That's all. Yes. Yes. It's for one's own happiness, because as soon as someone doesn't deal mercifully, you become angry. But the point, if you're actually merciful, then you're going to be merciful too. Because the point is somebody deserves mercy and someone's not how you say it? It's names for that. Acquiring, no. Not qualified. It means that they are offering, giving it the proper name means that it's kind of like it's older. No, it's not a matter like that. Whatever it is. But they're not dealing in that way. But the point is by dealing roughly, what happens to the person? Right? They'll get in trouble. So then if you're merciful to them, then the reason that you're teaching them to not deal roughly is so that they won't get rough treatment in the future. That's actual merciful. So it's like, this person is being roughly dealt with. They shouldn't be dealt like that. And if you deal roughly, you'll be dealt with roughly in the future. So therefore, rough dealing should be stopped. But here's the person that should be merciful to, and they're rough with them. So that shouldn't go on, so it'll be rough with them to stop it. There's actually no mercy there. Right? The mercy is very meager in that it's only for, the little guy. But the big guy, if he doesn't understand what he's doing is going to get him in trouble, then how are you actually merciful? How are you actually equal? Right? How are you actually tolerant? Because there, I can't tolerate this. Okay, great. But, what's the reason you can't tolerate it? Yeah, when I was small, everyone beat up on me, so I can't. Yeah, but that's because you were beat up on it. If you were the big guy, if it was like that, then, it was great. It was good, clean fun, it's like that, You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that that's why it's said it's not real qualities, right? They're reflections by the modes of nature, by one's desire, but they're temporary. They keep changing. Like that. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not sentimental. That's the thing. Because yeah. Yes, because otherwise it won't help there, because you're not actually dealing with the problem. You're dealing what part of the problem annoys you, but the educating, the training part, that's not, it's just they automatically have to be like that, but then why would they automatically have to be like that? What I'm saying? You have a Westerner, they come from the West, they've been living in the West their whole life, and they come to Mayapur, and then they behave badly here. Then you say, oh, they're unqualified, but what was done to qualify them? It's just like that's the way they behave. So you want that to change, then you have to train them, what's proper behavior and why. Does that make sense? Then it has some meaning. But otherwise, if it's just we expect everybody else to be perfect and we're the only ones that can have some, we're the only ones that everybody else has to understand and be, accommodating, then that's definitely not amani mana dana. So does that make sense? Okay. Now here comes the part we'll all probably enjoy. A Vaishnava may be criticized on four counts. Ah, so he can criticize. I knew it. His caste by birth, previous sins or faults in his life, an unpremeditated accidental act of sin, and present traces of previous sinful activity. Though all these conditions may be present in a Vaishnava, they are insubstantial grounds for criticism of a Vaishnava. Now that didn't work out too well for us, did it? There looked like there was some opening here. Yeah. On these accounts, then you can criticize. Yeah. But it means, he said there's these four accounts that you could criticize on, but they're still not substantial enough for criticism. Right? So by birth, previous sins or faults in his life, unpremeditated accidental act of sin, and present traces of previous sinful activity. Though these conditions may be present in the Vaishnava, they are insubstantial grounds for criticism of a Vaishnava. One who so blasphemies the Vaishnava will be punished by Yamaraj, because the Vaishnava is spreading the glories of the Lord's name. The Lord does not tolerate such criticism of a Vaishnava. Giving up dharma, yoga, sacrifice, and jnana for the name of Krishna, the Vaishnava is the topmost person. Criticism is a serious offense. Because right? One is spreading the glories. Right? Even if one's not a big preacher, still, others become influenced. Others see, they preach in their own way, small way, and they have influence. So that's Krishna doesn't like that. One should rather eagerly take the dust from the feet of a Vaishnava, regardless of whether he is a grihastha or sannyasi. One will treat him only according to his advancement as a Vaishnava, which is based on his degree of attraction to the holy name. Right, so that's the main thing. Such things as caste or ashram, wealth, learning, youthfulness, beauty, strength, or number of followers are not factors. Yes.
It can be also inspiration for us to develop those other qualities, like in connection to some other, not to be object of criticism for others.
That can be, but the point is it still only has a value if it's connected to Krishna, because you could develop them not connected to Krishna, and then people stop harassing you. But you're seeing it simply, I'm doing this so that people don't bother me, rather than as an impetus for developing love for Krishna. Right? You know, let's say you're managing and they say you're not skillful enough. So you develop the skills. But it's not because specifically it was being developed to please Krishna, but it was so that people wouldn't criticize you.
It should be done as an expansion of surrender.
That's the point. Is surrender, that attraction to Krishna's holy name, that's the primary. Secondary is all these qualities and the retraction from material nature, which basically means your bad qualities and the cultivation of good qualities. But they're not cultivated separate than the chanting process. Right? One doesn't have to go out of one's way to bump into these things. Right? You don't have to go sit out on the street or anything. Be merciful, there's constantly, that's there within engagement with devotees. To be tolerant, that's, you know. Yes. Sama, equal. Right? Penance without injury to the body, truthfulness, purify. They all come in just our day-to-day interaction with devotees, the performance of our duties. We don't have to look separately. You understand? So that's why Prabhupada says we don't, other than the holy name. So we focus on the holy name. These come naturally in the performance of duties. But we don't focus on them. Otherwise, it's like focusing on the retraction rather than attraction to Krishna. Right? It's a mistake. One can put a lot of energy into these things, but as long as one's seeing in connection to the service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Because association with those who are not devotees is bound to produce disrespect for devotees. sadhu-ninda. The devotee is careful to avoid such association. Materialistic association, or asat-sangha, is of two kinds. Association with women and association with those devoid of devotion to the Lord. Association with women means associating with women, not according to Vedic tradition. This association with women, which is not authorized by scriptures, divided into association with women outside of marriage for the purpose of sex life, and association within marriage for one is controlled by one's wife. Thus, only if one is married according to prescribed rules and is following the rules for married life, in which his wife is submissive to the husband and the husband acts as a sadhu, is the association considered bona fide. Other types of associate are considered asat. Is that clear? Yes.
You mentioned in the, I think it was last Sunday class, that in the relationship between husband and wife, there is an element that the husband has to be sensitive to the needs of the wife. So in some sense, he has to be controlled by the woman.
Yeah, sadhu.
So how to find that balance?
Sadhu. Gentle. Right? Pure. Clean. Right? These are the places, you know, equal, sama, tolerant, merciful. Right? Truthful. Have I mentioned any, have I missed something that these are the things that the wife gets annoyed at the husband over? Right? Attentive, alert. That one's a very important one. Right? Peaceful. Regulated eating means when she feeds you, you eat. When she doesn't feed you, you don't eat. That's called regular. Right? Apathy to your own materialism. Right? Steadiness. You're always there. Right? Very grave means, you know, when she's unhappy, you're very grave. You're not, you know, buoyant and all that. Conquering the six gunas, you know, hunger, thirst, lamentation, envy, old age, and death. She doesn't want to hear about it, what your problems are. Right? Isn't it? Not expecting honor from others. Right? Giving respect to others. Skillful, right? They always criticize if you're no good, Nick, right? Non-hypocritical means what you say, you do. Right? Knowledgeable of the scriptures, as long as you apply it according to all these other characteristics. Right? So, when it says, and the husband acts as a sadhu, so when it says here, see, we're going along here, you know, thus, only if one is married according to prescribed rules, okay, cool, following the rules for married life, okay, basically, in which the wife is submissive, aha, right, to the husband, right, we catch that, but, and the husband acts as a sadhu, that one, all the men finesse. Is the association considered bona fide? So that's the whole point, is that it, you know, it says the wife is submissive to the husband. It gives one quality. It says the husband has to act like a sadhu. That's 26. Okay, now you know why I talk more about the one than the other? Because the point is, as if the 26 are there, the submission is easy. Who doesn't want to surrender to a sadhu? You know what I'm saying? So it's the lack of sadhu-ness that there's lack of submission. So we see even here is that he's putting that emphasis on these qualities. Right? But it's according to Shastra. Right? Like that. Is that something? The second type of asat association, association with non-devotees, is of three types, right? So there's two types, with the materialists and with women. So with women, then it's meant to find, now with the materialists, right? And that's of three kinds, right? And associated with women means it's not authorized by scripture, right? Outside, and then, and within marriage where one is controlled by one's wife. But what does that mean? Controlled doesn't mean it looks like you're controlled. It means you are controlled. There's a difference. Women want to control, but they want it so it looks like they're in control. But if they actually have control, then that gets boring real fast. You know what I'm saying? The point is that it appears you do, but at the same time they know they don't. They wanted something, you did it, but they know that you did it out of, you know, one of these other qualities, mercifulness or this and that, not because you're controlled. Does that make sense? There's a difference. So he's saying is, therefore, when you're following the rules, so in other words, if you're married according to prescribed rules and following the rules for married life, that gets rid of the illicit connection, right? And he is a sadhu, that gets rid of the control, right? And if that's there, then everybody's happy. Okay? The second type of asada association with non-devotees is of three types. Association with mayavadis, association with pretenders, and association with atheists. Okay. Mayavadis believe that the Lord and the jivas are both temporary entities and that the Lord's murti, is form, is material. That's why they call mayavadis. Everything is maya. If you can perceive it, it's maya. That's why they're called mayavadis. You know, and they use the term also. So it's not, sometimes they used to think, you know, sahajiyas, you know, that's our word for them. No, they call themselves sahajiyas. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's you use the term that they, how you say? They call themselves by. Smartas, that is their, what they call themselves. They're smartas. They're smarta Brahmins. Like that.
The same meaning?
Yeah, they follow the rules. They're exact in following the rules. They're very, very paka. But the problem is they think just following the rules is all you have to do. That's our criticism. We're not criticizing that they're following the rules. We're criticizing that they don't understand there's a purpose to the rule higher than food of activities. But as far as being proper Brahmins and all that, you know, we don't have any criticism of that. Generally speaking, they're in many cases be way ahead of us, you know, when it comes to the culture. Does that make sense? The pretenders, though without genuine devotion or renunciation, pretend to be devotees to make a living. Right? So they're making their money off of being devotees. But we don't see attachment to Krishna, we don't see renunciation. So we avoid that. Right? Actually, such a person is not a Vaishnava, or you could say, such a person is a Vaishnava, right? The problem with English, right? The A. I guess he's a Vaishnava. But the dim image of a Vaishnava. Vaishnava Abhas. However, if he is not a Vaishnava, how will he be permitted to associate with Vaishnavas who do not associate with non-Vaishnavas? Therefore, this person is considered to be at the beginning stage of Vaishnava, Kanista Vaishnava, upon whom the actual fixed up Vaishnavas will bestow mercy so that he becomes purified. Did I? Oh, I did. But you want to know what's very interesting. It's just the connection there. But it'll come up here. Yeah. This is a very, very interesting point. Because I was looking at a Vaishnava, and then up here there was a Vaishnava, and so then I just connected them. That's getting too freaky. Okay. Now these people may claim to be devotees and may be accepted by the public as such, but if one rejects such people, it is not considered sadhu ninda. Right? You know, sometimes you see these professional kirtaniers and sometimes these different kinds of professional, they make their living off of being sadhus of some sort. Then it's not considered sadhu ninda. Right? Because it's only a show, they're pretending. You know, like that. Does that make sense? It's not that someone is a sadhu, but they still are having all kinds of bad qualities from their previous results of karma. You know, we're talking about that they're only doing it as a living. Furthermore, one who criticizes a person who gives up these asat people should also be rejected and avoided. Right? So, the person who criticizes that you can't give up such bad association is also to be given up. Therefore, the serious devotee gives up a satsanga, which causes sadhu ninda. and exclusively takes shelter in the name will certainly receive the treasure of prema. Right? Does that make sense? So the atheists, those who don't believe in following all the, you know, properly and all that, they just have their mundane concepts, and that defines good and bad. That's given up. Those who are pretending to be devotees and they make their living that way, that's to be given up. And the Mayavadis, that is all, yes.
It is all, I would say, quite often visible in community of devotees that by improper association, they develop offensive mentality and thus they strain,
stray,
avoid the association of actual devotees.
Yes. Yeah, that's why, because you become attached to that. You associate with atheists, you take on that mentality. Pretenders, you take on that. Mayavadis, you take on that. You become like you associate with. That's the nature. The jiva is not going to be able to function outside of that. Does that make sense? They become like what they associate with. Krishna doesn't. He's sitting in your heart, and he doesn't become a materialist. Right? But we do, because we're energy. We're dependent. So then whatever we associate with, we start to take on those qualities. Okay. Now the next paragraph is on. One must furthermore be able to distinguish the types of Vaishnavas according to their spiritual advancement. These are of three types. The materialistic Vaishnava, or Vaishnava Praya, almost a Vaishnava, is he who has mediocre faith in Krishna, but has no service attitude towards sadhus. Actually, such a person is not a Vaishnava, but the dim image of a Vaishnava, Vaishnava Abbas. However, if he is not a Vaishnava, how will he be permitted to associate with Vaishnavas who do not associate with non-Vaishnavas? Therefore, this person is considered to be at the beginning stage of Vaishnava, Kanista Vaishnava, upon whom the actual fixed-up Vaishnavas will bestow mercy so that he becomes purified. You catch the import here? So basically speaking, what he's saying is when Prabhupada says advanced devotional service begins at Madhyama, at Nishta, that's because that's where actual being a devotee begins. Before that, one's the reflection of a devotee. Right? Because the Madhyamas, generally you see, they're more steady than things than that. The criticism, Vaishnavas, and all these things are reduced. But for the neophyte, you know, hey, it's open season, right? You know, it's... Does that make sense? With mediocre faith, because we have so much faith that the material lifestyle is going to make us happy. Right? Material degrees are going to make us happy. If we have money, we'll be happy. If we have position of power, we'll be happy. So that means our faith isn't so much on Krishna as on these things. But it's a conditioning. It's just we're not complaining. We're just stating the fact. Right? No service attitude to sadhus, right? That attitude is there, then that's good. Right? But if it's not there, like in the present day, it's like how much is the sadhus appreciated? How much is that respected? Oh no, they said, you don't want to serve them because then they'll fall down. You know, like this. So what's the point? So this combination, you know, where we have faith in political correctness and we have authority issues, that's exactly what he's talking about here. All we've done is change the wording. So if I say mediocre faith and I'm saying I'm being practical, and I say no service added to sadhus, and we change that into, you know, we're just, you know, being politically correct, just because we've changed the names. Because we call it what is it called? Ethnic cleansing? No. It would have had a better word, was it? Was it called ethnic cleansing?
Yeah.
It means previously they used to call it genocide, you know. You know, that didn't go down too well, the world didn't like it and all that, and it didn't go well for those countries. But if we change it to ethnic cleansing, then that definitely people should buy, right? Ethnic is good, cleansing is good. Hey, you know, so it's like, does that make sense? So just because we change the names doesn't mean that we've actually changed the position. So in other words, technically, one's not a devotee until one becomes Madhyama. So since the devotees are not supposed to associate with non-devotees, according to the rule, they should not associate with neophyte devotees because they're technically not devotees. Does that make sense? But because if they're calculated like that, they'll get no association. Right? Therefore, then they're counted as beginning stage of devotional service. Right? So we'll came from there. When technically beginning is from Madhyam, because they're the Kanista pure devotee. Right? And then the Madhyama is the Bhava is the Madhyama, and then the Prema, that's the Uta. But it's adjusted so that the neophyte gets association. You know what I'm saying? But it's dangerous. Right? As Prabhupada said in the purport, you know, in this last week too. The Prithu Maharaj, you know, says that you take on the sinful reactions, all the different things, all the criticisms, and this and that, right? Does that make sense? So it's dangerous, so you want to be careful. Only deal with it how much you can. Does that make sense? So, the point is that's why then the preaching and the mercy is there. One doesn't have to look outside. That's why preaching to devotees is considered even more important. Right? You can catch all the karmis, that's great, but the ones who have taken up the process, then that's where the so much effort should be given. Because then when they get properly trained, right, they understand. In other words, you learn the philosophy, you have faith in Krishna, you learn what is sadhus, what are devotees, then one deals more nicely. By engaging in the chanting process, taking prasad, then one becomes purified. So the knowledge and detachment come greater. So then naturally just one comes up in that association. Does that make sense? So that's how it's actually working. So that's why it's, you know, that term utsamayi. Right? You know, we just take up the devotional process and we think we're big, big devotees. But we're not actually big, big devotees. When you don't think you're a big, big devotee, that's the beginning of being a big, big devotee. But if you think you're a big, big devotee, then you're not a big, big devotee. Does that make sense? The next higher stage of Vaishnava is the Madhyama Bhakta, right? So he's made it very clear. It's not a matter of that, well, maybe he means this and that. No, he says, then the next stage is Madhyama. Who can recognize the important position of the Lord's devotees, right? Because the other one before didn't so much. That's why the service attitude is there more or less, right? And thus always associates with them. In faith, he is convinced of Krishna's position as the Lord, the jivas as his eternal servants, the process of bhakti, and the goal is prema. Right? So that means you can have third-class pure devotees. So then they're very fine to associate with. Just they don't know enough philosophy and all that to be able to carry them through if they come across something they can't explain. You know, someone asks them a question or there's a situation in life, so they get stumped on that. But that's why they're defined as neophyte, only because of that. But faith-wise, then they're not neophyte. You understand? So you have that. You see. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So that's the overlap there. So it still keeps the central thing of surrender to Krishna, right? And appreciation of the Vaishnavas as the core thing. Other qualities are, yeah.
Yes.
He would be in that category. He would be there. Because it's like he's an eternal associate, so he's just there to pass on. So in his part in the Lord's pastimes, he's not like a pundit and knows all the Shastra and all that. So it's not that he can't explain devotional service, but if you're talking to the Mayavadis, they expect Shastra. So he won't be able to quote all the Shastra. But if he was talking to someone who was not attached to it without the Shastra quotes, you know, could appreciate, then he could speak very nicely. It's not a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like Mother Jashoda, she's able to say all these things, but she doesn't necessarily quote the scripture. He shows mercy to the innocent, those who have little faith, the Kanista Bhaktas, by giving them Sambandha Gyan. And he avoids the enemies, Asat Sangha, understanding the different effects of the different kinds of association. Even at this stage of Madhyama Bhakta, one is considered a pure Vaishnava, with the qualification of taking the real holy name, not Namabhas. Right? So, you see here, it's very interesting, is that technically one's not actually a devotee, and then one becomes a devotee at Madhyama, but that's called a pure devotee. What we'll tend to go is you're a devotee at Madhyama, but you don't become a pure devotee till Uttama. But that's the neophyte's vision because he doesn't actually appreciate sadhus. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty, is that how to view it, that we're not dealing with properly. Because, you know, we're used to the extremes, right? That all or nothing. So what's in the middle is generally what we don't catch. So the Madhyamadhikari is not something we talk about much or give much credence to. You know, it's just like you have the neophyte, and then there's the Madhyama, and then there's the Uttama. But actually, there's the neophyte, then there's the Madhyama and the Uttama. That's actually how it works. We put the gap in the wrong spot. Like we'll put the gap between the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. Then Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, they got, no, the gap's between the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. You know, like that. Or between the Vaishyas and the Shudras. You're counting Dvijas, it's there. You know? Does that make sense? If you're counting, you know, the basis of Shastra and all, then it's between the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. So we always tend to, by our own calculation, put the gap in the wrong place, right? Therefore, the, how you say, the British saying, mind the gap, because we always put it in the wrong place. Okay? Yes? As a real Vaishnava, he is able to distinguish a Vaishnava from a non-Vaishnava, so that he may avoid asatsanga and sadhu-ninda and serve the advanced devotees. Actually, he must do this for his own advancement. So he can tell who's real devotee, who's not a devotee, and who is asatsanga. Right? So therefore, he associates for his own benefit with the advanced Vaishnavas. He'll associate with the neophyte devotees so that, you know, he can help them in their advancement and please the Lord through the preaching process. But those who are not surrendered to Krishna in any way, he avoids them altogether. Right? Other than if he's preaching and all that. But he doesn't associate. Right? He doesn't take it that, you know, that he does that, oh, they're so intelligent, oh, they're so smart, not like the devotees. You know, devotees are so rough, but they're so gentle and nice and all that. They're missing the point. They're not real qualities. Yes.
Once I appreciate it, I don't know it absolutely properly, but I think that the word association in English doesn't convey all the meaning of the word sangha, because sangha actually is attachment, like stri sangi, and so both in terms of positive and negative, it conveys in Sanskrit actually more meaning than we just explained by the word association?
Yes. Because it's basically that attachment. Like Manu is explaining that one doesn't lose the position because of, you know, having, you know, ridden with them or eaten with them or things like that. You know, it's when you identify with them. And then in a later verse it says, you know, someone who eats with them is like this. But it means the one is not like you took down, you have a Sunday program and you're eating prasad and there's a materialist there. It doesn't mean that. It means that you go to his house and you're completely comfortable with being with him and associating on their level and eating with them. Then you're one of them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the difference.
This expression in English, I think, could be on the same page.
Be on the same page. Yeah, kind of, but that doesn't have the emotional element. Generally, they're on the same page means as far as skill goes or what's to be done, you appreciate. I would say is you could see, I mean, see if it works, but let's say you have someone who's from, it's probably anywhere, but we'll just use this as an example, from a Latin background. Okay? Now let's say you happen to be out at some formal program and you're sitting with them and eating. They you know, that's okay. You know, it's nice, but you haven't eaten with them. But if you go to their house and sit with them there and eat their food, then you've eaten with them. Does that make a difference? Because the one is then you're sharing the thing. This is just you're both involved in the third party. But here it's directly between. You understand? So third party association is not considered association that will give you problems. Therefore, in the preaching, you keep it to third party association. Right? Does that make sense? But when it's directly between you, the association, the interaction, like that, that's the difference. So that's what you're talking about, because what comes up there is the attachment. Yes.
It seems like the exchange is the devotees giving prasadam, that implies, you know, making it and giving it and,
yes,
you know, the whole interaction. Yes. And that, I guess, leads to that idea of attachment. By doing that, it creates affection between,
yes,
devotees.
Yes.
Yes,
so the non-devotees, you would be very careful. You know, in other words, you wouldn't reveal more or ask more or, you know, I'm saying if you see that there's something, there's some interest in the devotional process, there's some glimmer there, then you could be a little bit more, you know, it starts to get more and more, you know what I'm saying? So in other words, the one is very formal, the other one is informal. So the difference is the informality, that's where the danger is. You know, the formal is that, you know, that's why it's designed that way, to keep any problems from going on. Yes?
It's difficult to know for some of us to, how to relate with family.
How to relate with family.
Yeah, because, you know,
but isn't that just part of being a Westerner?
But with regard to, you know, understanding asat sangha.
Asat sangha, but point is you're associating. Point is do you have a good relationship with the family or not? Basically, okay. So they're going to expect you to interact and deal like you've always dealt, right? So, but the point is you know, minor adjustments are there. You don't, you know, you're not gonna, you're not in there. How you say? Unless they come up with a vegetarian haggis, you're not in. You're not in, right? You know. So these kind of things are going to. You know, saying that'll have to adjust, but the point is how you deal with them and nice and all that. That remains, but the point is you're doing that on the platform. If you deal like that, then they'll like you. Then they'll like the devotional service, because to them you represent devotional service. They don't like you. They don't like devotional service. They like you. They like devotional service, but you're not associated with them because it's family and that's where you're comfortable and all that. You're associating because that's what you do with family. You understand? There's a change in the mentality. That's not necessarily a change in the activities. You know what I'm saying? You know, unless, of course, the activity was, you know, rough and exploited. You know, you don't sit on your little brother and sit there and then tap him on the chest for 10 minutes until, you know, like that stuff. Kind of. That kind of stuff you can leave. And he'll appreciate it. Okay. So the Madhyama must associate with those more advanced for his own advancement. But he's making that arrangement, right? At the same time, he has to be kind to the neophyte, right? So that's why the Uttama takes this position. Because he associates with those who are advanced, and he's kind to the neophytes. Does that make sense? Yeah. So does that make sense? Right. And then even as within the preaching movement, the neophyte takes that position. So he's even preaching to others. Right. If Does that make sense? You know, but specifically getting the association of the madhyamas. So the madhyamas are taking advantage of the madhyama association, the uttama association is there, he takes advantage. But he's always appreciating devotees because madhyama means advanced. So it says you must associate with advanced devotees. Technically it means madhyamas, right? And then if you get the association of uttamas, take it. But if you don't, madhyama is good association because they're pure devotees. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
For example, in this con, when we join, we are many of us are engaged in a preaching mission, trying to give Sambhana Gyan.
Right.
So, in one sense, by this bearing process and quick process, can we say that there is an opportunity to become.
Yes, yes, that's right. Because if you do the activities of something, then you become like that. Like if you cook, you become a cook, right? You don't know cooking, but you associate with cooks. You do what cooks do, and you become one. So you're not a madhyam, but you associate with madhyams, do what they do, assist them in that, and you become one. So that's why it's the quickest. But the madhyam is advanced, so by the madhyams associating with madhyams, they also advance, because you're associating with advanced devotees. Does that make sense? So the central point comes back to the madhyams. That's the thing. We put it on uttams, right? Uttams and neophytes. You know, neophytes are great because, you know, if we're a neophyte, then we're great, so therefore the neophytes must be great. But, you know, the uttams, then that's the real great. You know, I'm great, but they're really great, okay? I can appreciate that. You know, you have a star and a superstar, you know, like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, there's a VIP and a VVIP. Okay, you can appreciate. So, but the madhyamas don't quite factor into it, you know. But here is putting it the other way around. Because the madhyamas are the central focus. Because Sukadeva Goswami running naked through the forest and not really interacting with anybody because he sees everybody as devotees and of the Lord and everything is Brahman, then, you know, you might not get a whole lot out of that. You know, and if you try it, it might not work for you. You know, it might not work, you know. Does that make sense? He who experiences Krishna as the life and soul of everything, and thus sees Krishna situated in everything, and consequently does not make distinction between Vaishnava and non-Vaishnava, but simply engages in relishing the nectar of the holy name, is called the Uttama Vaishnava, the most advanced devotee. Right? So you can see as the madhyama is the prominent within the preaching mission. Because here he makes no distinction. So for him he doesn't see a distinction. So whoever he's with, he'll associate with them on their level of advancement. But he sees everybody as devotees. Just some may be more, some may be less. Like that, how much they're committed to. But it's, because the point is the illusion doesn't have much meaning. Right? It's an illusion. Does that make sense? You know, if you're sitting there in the desert, and your friend next to you sitting there in the desert, and suddenly he gets up and goes, "Hey, you want a coconut?" You know, it's like, you know, it's not a big deal. Does that make sense? But you still deal with him properly, like that. Does that make sense? Right? Like, how do you deal with a little kid? Right? They come up to you and hand you something and say, you know, take care of my koala bear here. You know, and they've handed you a stick or something like that. You know, so you don't go, "Hey, what is it? This is a stupid stick." You know, what is that? You don't do that. You deal with them on that platform. You know, so now it's you're dealing with it, you know, it's Krishna's koala bear. You're dealing properly. You know, stuff like, you know what I'm saying? It's just, you're dealing within their illusion. But you don't make the distinction that they're not, you know, part of the family or part of, you know, humanity. Right? You don't go, they're crazy, you know. Does that make sense? It can be seen that it is important for the practitioner of bhakti, whether a kanista or a madhyama bhakta, to understand in his performance of sadhana his own position in devotional service according to his internal purity. So one has to understand the position. By doing this, one can avoid non-devotees, asatsanga, and by this one can advance further. Therefore, it is important that one come to the position of madhyama bhakta, who is qualified to make these distinctions, right? In other words, everybody must make the distinction, but it's easy for a madhyama to do. It's not so easy for a neophyte. So that's why everybody should come to the platform of a madhyama, because that's the better platform. Right? The typical activities of a real devotee, madhyama bhakta, are to avoid sadhu-ninda, and to take association of sadhus, serve sadhus, and give knowledge to the innocent jivas while performing nam samkirtan. So innocent jivas, than anybody who's innocent, right? So that means your neophytes, you know, they're the best of your innocents, and your those who aren't devotees who are open to it. But if they're mayavadis, atheists, or pretenders, generally that's just, you know, avoided. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else on the sadhu nindas? Yes.
To come to the level of bhajan, it's a matter of increasing one's faith.
Yeah, it's increasing faith. Increasing faith and being able to, because of that faith and endeavor, then that knowledge and detachments come to a point that one's bhajan is stable. Right? Because I mentioned steadiness is one of the qualities. So before the madhyam platform, the tendency is to not be so stable because one is distracted by one's conditioned desires. So one has faith in something other than Krishna. These material facilities will make me happy. Right? That's the difficulty.
Isn't there also an element that education is important because a kanista bhakta has the tendency to see things according to the external features?
Yes. Yeah, education is very important. But you can see from it that the education is very important to train one to get to the madhyama platform. The madhyama will be able to take the maximum advantage of the education. You know what I'm saying? But it's still important. Right? Like the undergraduate is learning the same subject matter, but what they'll get out of it will be different than what a postgraduate will get out of it. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that's why one studies it, because to get one to that platform of discrimination is that the philosophy teaches us how to discriminate. That's what we're doing. You know, that's the point that comes up, is that we have to be able to discriminate, because what we do is, for our own purposes, separate things when they shouldn't be separated and put things together when they shouldn't be separated, you know, like that. In other words, we're using intelligence. Like when you say something, and then somebody comes up with an exception. There's one exception, but they found it. That means it's intelligent. But what they're doing is they're separating when they should be putting together and putting together when they should separate. You know, so does that make sense? So it's like we're talking one thing about, you know, only this is like that. No, but isn't, you know, the neophyte also a devotee? And says, you know, yes, no, they're all devotees. No, but isn't it just the uttama is a devotee? You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? We always have this tendency is to, the discriminations is not always applied in the best way. Does that make sense? Like that. It's something. No? Okay. So then we'll continue. But Monday, yeah. Monday we're back to normal, right? Yeah.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaurav Premanandi.